Welcome to the Badass CEO Podcast. This is Mimi McLean. I'm a mom of five, entrepreneur, Columbia Business School grad, CPA, and angel investor. And I'm here to share with you my passion for entrepreneurship. Throughout my career, I have met many incredible people who have started businesses, disrupted industries, persevered, and turned opportunity into success. Each episode, we will discuss what it takes to become and continue to be a badass CEO, directly from the entrepreneurs who have made it happen. If you're new in your career, dreaming about starting your own business, or already an entrepreneur, the Badass CEO Podcast is for you. I want to give you the drive and tools needed to succeed in following your dreams. Welcome back to the Badass CEO. This is Mimi, and today we have Hillary McCain, and she's the founder and CEO of Sweet Reason, a best-selling CBD-infused sparkling beverage brand. Hillary launched Sweet Reason in 2018 and has been kicking ass as a female founder ever since, including launching a new product in the middle of the COVID pandemic. Hillary, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so excited to hear your story, and I love CBD-infused drinks. It's like my favorite thing, so thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I would love to hear your journey about like how you picked, from the food industry, how you picked this particular product, like a drink versus food, and how you picked CBD.
Yeah, it's funny. I did grow up in the food industry, but I definitely never thought that I would start a food business. If anything, like growing up in the food industry should have scared me away from starting a food business or something in the food industry. But I was always really interested in carving my own path and doing my own thing. So for a long time, I had wanted to do something called a search fund, which is essentially a path to entrepreneurship through acquisition. So I went to business school and then post-business school, moved back to Toronto and decided to start a consumer-facing food-focused search fund looking for like an old-school business to buy. Think like a $20 million in sales, like old chocolate factory or an old bread factory that you buy essentially with a bunch of bank debt and run and like, you know, just try not to grow the revenue, but just like maintain the profitability and pay down your debt over time, et cetera. And I thought that this was like a great path to entrepreneurship without having to take all the risks. And it's a very common path post-MBA these days. But I, in my search for a food business in Toronto and in Canada, I sort of got sucked into the food startup world, which is a really wonderful community of people that are so passionate about what they do. Like a lot of people in the food industry just like get into it because they like love baking this thing at home, or they discover the health benefits of chia seeds or of good fats in their diet. And so there's just, it is a really infectious community. And so I sort of started getting like bit by the startup bug. And then in the summer of 2017, cannabis recreational legalization was on the horizon in Canada. So we were a couple months away from cannabis being legalized recreationally. And I really started thinking about where that market was going to go and what was going to happen, and really about how there's such amazing health benefits to the plant, but how they are so inaccessible to so many people that might have health and wellness concerns around smoking a joint, and how the future of cannabis was really in cannabis beverages, and how cannabis beverages really will replace how we socialize, how we think about alcohol, how we think about mental health, and all like the health benefits that can come from cannabis. I really became like intellectually obsessed with cannabis beverages and noticed that a lot of the people in the industry were not really consumers. They weren't really consumers and they weren't from the food industry either. So they didn't have like food industry expertise to bring to cannabis. They were very much like pharma people. Anyway, so there was that. And then I simultaneously, as I was, you know, sort of like watching this cannabis market grow in Canada, I also discovered hemp CBD and learned about all the health benefits of hemp CBD and started like tinkering around personally and really became obsessed with these really unique health benefits. CBD has a unique ability to calm your mind and focus your attention. And that to me is something that's very hard, if not impossible, to find in other foods. And in the food and wellness world combined, it's more, you know, akin to like meditation and like that feeling after you take a yoga class. And the fact that you could get that from CBD was incredible to me. So I decided to start a hemp and cannabis beverage business, which is Sweet Reason today, really CBD being our first line of products, but surely we will be in every cannabinoid beverage that is science-backed and regulatory approved over the next 5 to 10 years.
That's amazing. So when you launched, were there how many other CBD beverage companies were there? Because now I see them popping up. I mean, being in LA, it's like almost in every store. Yeah. So I'm just curious. And almost every store I go into is a different brand. So was it already kind of a populated industry, or were you one of the first?
No, we were one of the first on the market. So interestingly, we were supposed to launch in Canada, in Toronto. And then what happened was the government had fully said that they were going to carve out CBD from the Cannabis Act and legalize it, essentially. And 1 month before our first production run, they decided not to. So like I started Three Reason in January of 2018. Our first production run was supposed to be in August. We were launching in September. And in July, they said, we're actually not going to make this legal.
Oh my gosh.
I was like on a photo shoot in LA, like having the time of my life, like trying out edibles, thinking I had like the best job in the world, and get a call from my lawyer. And he's like, I don't know what to tell you, like against everything that they had advised us, they actually just made your business legal. So we had to very quickly pivot and switch gears. At that point, I had like already put personal money into the business. I hired a COO, this incredible COO. We were both so passionate about the opportunity and about CBD beverages. So quitting was really not an option. A lot of our competitors at the time closed their doors and returned money to investors. And we decided to launch in New York because coincidentally, within the same 48 hours that Canada made that announcement, the US announced that they were going to pass the farm bill. So it was a big like regulatory upheaval. And there's obviously in the CBD space, like regulations sort of control your every move. So we very quickly pivoted, had to like reinvent our whole supply chain, hire a whole new team, distributors, change the product packaging. Everything was new for the US market. Everything is different in both countries because it is a very regulated product. And we launched in New York in December of 2018 as the first CBD beverage on the market. Today, it's obviously far more crowded. There's so many beverages out there. There's so many CBD products out there. And I think that's really reflective of the demand from consumers. Like it is a product and it's an herbal extract that many people in the health and wellness world are like, oh, this is what we've been waiting for. Like something that really helps address anxiety in our society.
What recommendation would you give to somebody who wants to launch something in the food industry? Because it's really appealing. The food industry is very appealing because you hear these stories where you launch and within 3, 5, 7 years, you're selling at a pretty big number to a big player in the industry. That's typical, like, right? The exit strategy. So we all hear those great stories. But I have found like by just investing and looking at other kind of packaging and food industry companies, it's kind of like a tight group of people, like, you know, like to get into the Whole Foods of the world, right? Or to the Targets of the world, it's like kind of who you know a little bit, right? So do you find that when you launched, having your background in that helped? Or what advice would you give somebody who doesn't have that background?
I would start out by saying like the background helps, but it just gets you a head start. It doesn't make the road easier. You can like skip the first month of, you're not forever wondering how to make this product. Like I had, you know, in the early days, there were people I knew I could call and be like, how do you make a beverage? Should I do a can or a glass bottle? What are the pros and cons? How does carbonation work? Like that sort of thing. So I definitely have a head start in that way. But I would say beyond that and the initial stages, like it doesn't necessarily move the needle once you get past those first few months.
It's kind of like interviewing for a job, right? You get the interview, but you don't get the job just because you have the...
Yeah, and if you suck at the job, you're still fired. You know, in most companies, you're still fired if you're not good. So my advice to anybody that doesn't have a background in the industry would probably be to know where you should hire people that have industry experience and where that doesn't matter. That's my most like practical advice, I would say. So for instance, in beverage, it is very important to hire salespeople that have experience with beverage distribution.
Right.
And everybody knows that. And everybody thinks that. That's like a pretty undisputed fact, I would say. You do not need to hire people that have marketing beverage experience specifically. So I would think about that when you're building your team. But also I would say like for the food industry specifically, most people don't have experience in the food industry. They get into it. Most people are passionate about a product that they make at home or they discover the health benefits of, and that's how they get into it. And so I wouldn't be intimidated by that. It is a very tight community, but that's an amazing thing. It's like a very welcoming community, you know, like everybody's so excited about what the latest thing is, what the next new thing is. So if you have that, you are more than welcome in that like very tightly knit crew.
What have you found to be like the hardest part starting this? Like what has been your biggest obstacle?
Yeah, I would say I probably would answer that differently pre and post coronavirus. In general, like not specific to COVID, I would say that the hardest part of this business and this industry, and the hardest learning, if you will, is that if you are going into an industry that does not have, that has industry dynamics or barriers that are against you and that are out of your control, like regulations for CBD, you are facing an extremely uphill battle that you have no control over. And you can do everything right. You can have the best marketing and the best team and the best product, and it still is wildly out of your control. I've heard in the past, just with like general career advice, that you should get into an industry that's like a fast growing industry because you will grow with the industry and there's so much opportunity in that. I think similarly with like new businesses, I wish I knew more getting into this industry about how powerful these regulations were. I certainly was naive to that. And I think that's quite different than like, you know, there are a lot of industries that are just ripe for disruption, like mattresses before Casper or eyeglasses before Warby Parker. That's not what I'm talking about. In fact, I would say those, again, were ripe for disruption. I'm talking about industry dynamics that you cannot control, that if they don't change would really work against you. I think that that's been the biggest challenge for sure for us and all CBD companies today.
No, that makes sense. Talk a little bit about your financing. Have you personally financed this the entire time, if you don't mind talking about it, or have you had to bring in angel investors or VCs at this point?
I bootstrapped in the early days. I put in money in the early days, but we raised money pretty quickly. Beverage is a really expensive industry to play in so many ways. Like the initial run, production runs you need to do are huge. The contracts that you need to sign require crazy legal fees and crazy commitments around like the size of the team that you're going to have, et cetera. So we raised money very quickly within months of launching in New York. We raised with a top consumer firm in New York called Lair Hippo, who led our seed round. And we've since raised another round with Inside Investors.
That's great. Now, can you talk about that process? Was that hard to do that? I mean, you went to business school, so you kind of knew the lingo, but was that still intimidating? Was it hard?
I would say like in many ways, it was intimidating for sure. I love talking to investors. Like I worked in that world. I worked in finance and I worked in management consulting before. I had very similar backgrounds to a lot of them. So if anything, it felt like a fun part of the job for me, which is, I think, unusual for most entrepreneurs to say that because it is such a distraction from the business for sure. But I definitely had a head start because I went to business school and so many investors are business school grads. So for sure, that helped me. I think one of the benefits of being an entrepreneur that has had work experience is that you do know how to put together a deck. You do know what investors want to hear. You know how to pitch a business maybe better than you would if you were right out of school. There's for sure advantages to that as well, but there are some things that are probably easier for entrepreneurs that have work experience. And I would say raising money for me was one of them. Not to say it was easy at all, but it was definitely hard. There were definitely 100 no's before there was one yes. We've done two big raises now, and they are, I mean, seed stage, but like significant raises. And they were both, you know, we talked to over 100 people.
Oh my gosh.
For sure. It's definitely a lot. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but I don't think so. I mean, at least 50, 70, like you do talk to a lot of people. So
that's crazy. And then as far as like when you did that seed round, did you have any income at that point? Like, what did you do about valuation? People are always intrigued by that. Like, you know, especially when you don't have income at that point or so early on, like how are you valuing that company?
Yeah. So we did a seed round when we had 5 months of revenue, 6 months of revenue around then. I would say actually in retrospect, it's probably easier to raise a seed round pre-revenue because you are at that point, you're just selling the dream. And if you are a passionate entrepreneur, if you're a good entrepreneur, it's pretty easy to sell the dream. 6 months post-revenue is actually a very difficult time to raise money because you can't really sell the dream still because you have 6 months of reality, you know? And like it always takes longer to sell the product, to get hire that person than you think. And so I would say, if anything, in retrospect, I would have raised it pre-revenue. I think that's probably an easier time to raise money.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. What's the best business tip you have received from somebody? Or if you were to give a business tip, what advice would you give to an entrepreneur or CEO?
The best advice I've ever been given that I think really still resonates is that it is best, easiest to hire the right person right away. In order to solve problems and to grow, you need to have the right team and the right people. And that takes a long time. It takes a significant amount of effort in interviewing and like a significant amount of energy from a founder to really interview someone properly and understand if they're the right person, the right fit for the business.
Mm-hmm. Did you use an outside, like a headhunter? Did you do it on your own?
We've hired everybody on our own. I've tried to use headhunters in the past for actually one role, and I still found someone on my own.
Right. Has it been hard finding people, or you just kind of use like through people you know? And
I mean, it's sort of always hard finding people because you're picky with your business, but I've been super lucky. We have an incredible team. I think it's like probably one of the biggest differentiators of Sweet Reason in our industry is that our team is amazing. Our sales team is amazing and people love working with them. So I think once you hire a few good key people, like good people attract good people. And that I think really has a snowball effect.
That's great. Now, are you guys all virtually or do you have an office?
We had an office pre-COVID. We're now virtual. We are between New York, Toronto, and LA, mostly in New York. There's a few of us in Toronto, but the business is all entirely in New York and LA. So our whole team is there. It's just like the core original people that when we were going to start in Canada that are in Canada and the rest are in New York.
Yeah. And as a CEO, how do you create a company culture virtually?
Oh, that's a great question. It's my biggest challenge on my like wins and challenges list with investors every month is how do you maintain culture virtually? It's difficult for sure. Like I don't have answers at all. I talk to people about this all the time. It's definitely something that I need to prioritize more going forward now that we are permanently in a virtual world. So, but I think one thing that we've made sure we do is we do see each other a lot. If anything, we see each other more. Like the team has more exposure now. Like I'm cross-functionally. I saw most people most days or had meetings with most people most days, but not everybody did. And so now we do have a morning call every morning at 9 a.m. for 15 minutes just to say hi and how's your evening and what are you watching on TV or what are you cooking? What are you reading and what are you doing today? I think that's really helped like actually strengthen our culture and our bond across different people on the team that might not necessarily have exposure to each other.
That's great. Now, I think a lot of people are always intrigued by people's like morning routines. Do you have any like good morning routine tips or work-life balance tips? Anything that you can shed light on?
Yeah. My husband commonly makes fun of me for this because I'm like, what should my new morning routine be this year? And he always says like, you are just permanently tinkering with your morning routine. Like it is my favorite topic, my favorite thing to tinker with. And it changes frequently. But yeah, the first thing I would say is like, I don't really believe that some people just aren't morning people. I think that especially entrepreneurs, like you just are forced to build your life around a business. If that means that like by 9 a.m., you need to be ready to go, smiling, energized, brains on, like every, you know, you are firing on all cylinders by 9 a.m., that means you need to, for me, that means I need to wake up 3 hours before that. I'm not like roll out of bed and 20 minutes later, walk into a meeting or turn on my Zoom. And I think that really is driven by necessity. So I always like joke with friends and say they're not morning people. I'm like, you just have to force yourself. Like it's not, everybody would prefer to sleep longer. Like nobody hates sleep, you know? Yeah. So I wake up around 6:15 or 6:30. I read the news for 45 minutes, which I'm actually currently tinkering with or trying to change. And then I go for a walk with my husband for about 30 minutes to walk our dog, come home, meditate, shower, get ready for work, and get into my day. I'm trying to change it now because I realized in retrospect, on looking back on 2020, I spent so much time reading the news.
Yeah, in the same way.
You know, like I don't know that I would call myself a news junkie, but I do read the news for 45 minutes every day, minimum. And I don't know what I got out of it. And I don't actually feel more informed than the next person. Like, I think it's very important to be informed, but you know, the news these days is just moving so fast that you can't really like actually be informed on the subject. So I'm right now testing out this thing where I've stopped reading the news. Bad week to stop reading the news, but I've stopped reading the news. So now my tweaked morning routine is I get up, I work out, then I do the dog walk with my husband. And then I come back and I'm like reading my book over breakfast for 20 minutes.
Do you feel better? Do you feel a difference?
Oh my God. I Googled like January 1st. I was so curious about this all of 2020. So January 1st, I Googled how to stop reading the news. And if you read about all these blog accounts of people doing it and saying, A, I read way more books, way more. I'm way more informed. And B, my mood is way better because I'm not so depressed like starting the day, you know? So I'm interested in it, but I'm on like day 5. So we'll see
how long it lasts. It's true. No, I'm more of a night person reading the news. And I find this week I've stopped and I've been so much more productive for work and sleep. And
yeah, I'm a bit scared about like becoming uninformed and irrelevant, but like I also
important, they're going to tell you. Like, I think my husband called me. He's like, are you following what's going on Wednesday? And I was like, no, I have no idea what's going on. I know.
And like Wednesday was a great example. Like then I read the news and I watched CNN and I was like, okay, I know there's something crazy going on. I can engage with it. But I mean, I feel like at this pace, you could read like a book a week. Like why would you not, if you think about that trade-off, both in like how much you could read and how much happier for me reading makes me than reading the news.
Right.
I'm interested.
Now, are you a paper or a digital person? Like how do you keep track of your life?
I float between the two. I am currently a digital person and I used one of the to-do list apps, but when things get crazy and overwhelming, I always come back to paper. Like if my to-do list gets too long, I end up being like, okay, here's like really the 5 most important things I need to do today. So, but generally I'm a digital person. I think like, especially with notes and almost everything's digital these days. So.
That's good. Where can people find your drinks?
Yeah, you can order online at drinksweareason.com. We have 2 key product lines. One are our sparkling waters, which are like your daily go-to, 10 milligrams of CBD. You drink them all day long. And they're perfect for like that mid-afternoon slump or like when you just need to like stay calm before a meeting. And then we just launched our evening blend, which was our first line extension. We launched it in the middle of the pandemic, which was crazy, but a much needed beverage for 2020. It is the highest dose CBD beverage on the market. And really it's a totally new beverage for the alcohol alternative space. So most alcohol alternatives on the market today mimic the taste experience of alcohol, but not the feeling of alcohol, not the functional effect of alcohol. And we thought that there was a perfect opportunity to use CBD to mimic the effect of alcohol and to layer it with other calming herbs and adaptogens that also had science-backed calming effects.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to try that. That sounds awesome. What's your favorite flavor?
Oh, I couldn't pick. It's like picking your favorite child. If I was pushed to, I would say in the sparkling water group, my favorite flavor would be strawberry lavender, and evening blend, my favorite is plum blush. Although most people order our sampler packs online. And then at retail, we're sold in New York and LA, and you can find us at over 1,000 retailers between those 2 cities. So,
but retailers in LA?
Yeah, we're at Lassen's. That's probably the best known one, but a lot of independent retailers. CBD is very, even though it's everywhere, it's still very much in like independent retailers.
So, it is. Yeah, I agree with you. Okay, to end, what piece of advice would you give either someone who's thinking about starting their own company right now or just got started launching their business?
I would say that what everybody else says, which is, you know, not that unique of me, but you really need to be so passionate about an idea and you need to be so passionate about it and committed to it, like long, long, long term, not looking for to exit within 5 years, that you are willing to shape your life around the business. I don't want to say give up your life and sacrifice everything for the business, because being an entrepreneur is incredibly rewarding. It's incredibly flexible. You have so much control over your life and schedule, which, you know, a lot of people say is like a key to like happiness at work, is just control over your schedule. But you really are forced to shape your life around the business and to do everything in favor of the business. So I would say that, which I think you do hear a lot. And then the other one that I think is people do talk about, but is less focused on, is I think entrepreneurs have to have this like fundamental sense of optimism that is just so important in their ability to survive entrepreneurship and to really look at problems optimistically and know that there is a solution to everything, that they just have to find it and that they are able to solve it, even if they've never done it before. And that really takes like a very deeply rooted sense of optimism.
I love those two pieces of advice. It's like having another child. Like it's like having a child, right? If you don't have a child, it's like either having another child or having a child where it's like you're in it for the long haul and no matter what happens, you know? So I totally agree with that. And I do think it's like things that sense of like, it's going to work out. And no matter what, you got to be a problem solver, right? Like, you're going to have problems mm-hmm. every day. So mm-hmm. it's figuring that mm-hmm. out. Those are great pieces of advice. Thank you so much. But anyway, yeah. So yeah. I'm super excited to try your night blend.
It's so like the reviews we've had on it are luckily insanely positive. I'm so grateful. We're actually only selling it online right now. So it's exclusively available on our website, but I'm so excited to get it into stores in LA, New York, and across the country.
What percentage are your sales online versus in the stores?
It's constantly changing because of COVID. Before COVID, it was 90% retail. So obviously 90% retail and heavily weighted towards New York. So obviously COVID was a rude awakening for us. But now like all businesses, we are really focused on growing the online channel. Mm-hmm. So today it really depends on the month, but we get as close to 50% of sales online.
Do you really? Good for you. That's yeah. great. Because your margins are actually higher too. Right?
In beverage, they're not because it's so expensive to ship beverages. It is tougher in beverage. You know, honestly, I look at online as like a marketing tool for us. Like it's really just about mm-hmm. getting people to try the product, but we, the future of the business will still be in retail.
Now, I don't know if this is true, but I want to tell people, anybody who's listening, like if you wind up going online and buying her product and they're not carrying it in your grocery store, if you ask your grocery store, right? If enough people ask, don't they then kind of go to the distributor and ask for it?
Yeah, for sure.
You can help yeah. Hillary out. Like if you order the product and you love it and your grocery store doesn't have it or any of your like local, like whatever restaurants, whatever coffee shops, that's where I go. They have them at the coffee shop. Ask them because then they'll ask their distributor to start carrying it. If they get
yeah, definitely. And if enough people ask, they realize that a lot of people want it and that definitely helps.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Hillary, for coming on. I cannot wait to try the night product. So I'm super excited about that. And I really appreciate your time and the best of luck to you to 2021. Make it be super prosperous for you.
Thank you. You too. So nice to meet you.
Thank you for joining us today on the Badass CEO podcast. Please visit us at thebadassceo.com to get your top 10 tips to be a successful CEO. Also, please join us at the Badass CEO Community Facebook page, where all entrepreneurs come together to share their journey. You can also email me at mimi@thebadassceo.com. I would love to hear from you. And if you can leave a review for the podcast, I would be so appreciative as it helps others find us. Until next week, go follow your dreams.